Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL Week 15 and 16. We'll also have our betting segment, NFL Jack's Pack. Of course, we will talk about the college football playoff and the landscape of college football in general. And we will have our best for last. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere else. And also, don't forget to follow the YouTube show. The new episode came out a couple of days ago by the time you guys hear this, so you'll be able to watch the YouTube show as well. And also, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news, updates, and coverage. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from. I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome into the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And again, as you heard in the intro, welcome in, welcome in. This is season 5, episode 33. And we're going to jump right into the NFL, right? So again, follow social media handle at JTime Sports. But we're going to jump right into the NFL. We're going to talk about NFL Week 15. The big headline out of Week 15 is the MVP race. Plain and simple. It to me is down to three people. It's down to Lamar Jackson. It's down to Josh Allen. And it's down to Saquon Barkley. Now, Saquon Barkley, to me, I'm going to start with Saquon first. He is third place to me. I think in the path to Saquon Barkley winning MVP was history. And that's kind of how I feel about any running back that wants to win it. It's got to be historic. You know what I mean? But history is ED's record. Now, he is still has a chance at it. At his current rate, he's going to fall about 20-ish yards short. So he still has a chance at it. But I think in order for him to get the MVP, or at least, I think he's offensive player of the year regardless. But I think in order for him to get MVP, he's going to have to break ED's record and get really close to the touchdown record, if not break it as well. If he breaks both, he has to be the MVP. If the tush push didn't exist, he would have been the MVP. I believe I saw a statistic, and I said a few weeks ago, but I think it's growing now. He's rushed down to the 1 yard line something like 12 times or 14 times, and they were 16 times. And out of those 16 times, the next play has been a tush push like 14 times. So if you equate those tush pushes into touchdowns, he's at 25 touchdowns. He's the runaway MVP favorite right now. But instead, he only has 11 touchdowns, but he does bolster 1,688 yards with about a month left in the season. So if he keeps his pace, he'll fall just short of ED's record. However, he is on pace for, 2,100 yards, let's just say, and 13 touchdowns. To me, in most years, that gives you a shot at the MVP. I don't think this is the year, because the MVP has transformed into a two-man race. However you want to put them, 1A, 1B, 1 and 2, 2 and 3. I mean, 1 and 2, 1A, 1B, one and 1A, like however you want to order it, it's down to two people, and that's Lamar Jackson and that is Josh Allen. Lamar Jackson's statistics as of right this second, he's thrown for 3,580 yards, 34 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's also rushed for another 743 yards and 3 touchdowns. Insane production from Lamar Jackson right now. As he is leading his Baltimore Ravens in absolute dominance. He had one of his signature games last game where he throws for 5 touchdowns and less than 5 interceptions and less than 5 incompletions. That's insane. Like, I think he's done it 5 times. Nobody else in the history of the NFL has done it more than 3 times. He'll have these games where it feels like a video game, where he's, you know, 20 of 24 for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns. And you're like, how is that even possible? Logically, it doesn't make sense. And I think that if his team was a little bit better record-wise, because they've given up 332 points so far, but he's put up 418 on offense. I think if they're a little bit better record-wise, he probably would be the MVP favorite. He's not mine currently. But he probably would be the MVP favorite, but he's putting up big time numbers. And I think this is going to be the number argument year for him. And on a complete and total side note, and I mean this in earnest, I had not looked at this until just now. I knew both teams' records, but I had not looked into the standings, right? The Bengals might get in the playoffs. Like, I know it's a total side note, right? As it sits right now, they're not in it, but they are 6-8. Oh, the Chargers are 8-6. Okay. It's unlikely, but it's on the table. I didn't think they had a chance. I thought like they were mathematically out. They're going to look back at a couple of heartbreakers that they lost. But anyway, that's what I was saying. So the Ravens sitting in second air division, they're sitting at 9-5. Right now, they'd be the fifth seed. The playoffs started today. So in that situation, usually the MVP goes to a division winner. And I think that it is massively, hugely important for the Ravens to catch the Steelers, because if they end up first in the division and end up battling Buffalo for the one seed, Lamar Jackson has a much better case of getting in the MVP race, because the Buffalo Bills, speaking of the Buffalo Bills, have my MVP favorite, and that's Josh Allen. His stats so far this year, 3,395 passing yards, 25 passing touchdowns. He's rushed for another 484 and scored 11 rushing touchdowns. So he has as many rushing touchdowns as Saquon Barkley. He is absolutely rolling, undefeated at home. I'm about to talk about his conference record, which is 7-2, but hell, his non-conference record is 4-1. He has locked up the number one seed. He has locked up the division. He locked it up Thanksgiving week. Now the AFC East is awful. This reminds me of the AFC East when the Patriots was on top, where the Patriots were like 12-2, and everybody in the best other team was like 5-9. And it was like, yeah, the division's over, like, before Thanksgiving. And that's kind of what the situation is with Buffalo. They're getting the advantage of the Patriots got for years, which was your division is awful. And so now the Bills are getting that advantage. And I think that because Patrick Mahomes isn't putting up the statistics he normally would, that leaves the door open for Josh Allen, who's not the one seed, but he's going to probably be the two seed. And that being the case, that he is going to, in my opinion, win the MVP. If the season ended today, Josh Allen's your MVP. He's having a hell of a year. I think it'll go Josh Allen, then Lamar Jackson, then Saquon, and then Saquon scoops up Offensive Player of the Year, because that tends to be how it goes. Offensive Player of the Year tends to be the best non-quarterback, and MVP tends to be the best quarterback. Just plain and simple, right? And so that being the case, that trending the case, I think Saquon ends up with Offensive Player of the Year and Josh Allen ends up with MVP. But speaking of those, before we leave Josh Allen, he had a hell of a game against the Detroit Lions, which catapulted him into the mindset of being number one in many people's eyes in the MVP race. But speaking of good football, last week the Packers played the Seahawks. What a ball game that was for the Packers. This was a game that I think elements came into play a little bit. I think that the Seahawks just, it's hard up there, man. They showed a record. Well, they showed the Dolphins record under 40 whenever the Dolphins went there. But Green Bay, now outside of it's cold, outside of the hotel wasn't great because it's Green Bay, Wisconsin. Outside of the fact you're basically playing in a neighborhood, outside of the fact that the amenities are old as hell, it's frozen, but it's melting because the Packers keep heat under their field because they're one of the last northern teams without a dome. Chicago doesn't have one either, but Chicago's building a new stadium with a dome. And so they're one of the last northern stadiums without a dome. The Jets and the Giants don't either. I mean, okay, back up. As I'm saying this, a lot of teams are coming to my brain. They're one of the last modern teams without turf and like modern heating without a dome. So the way the Packers heat the field, it's basically antifreeze and heat running through on the field. So it makes the field wet. It just melts the snow or melts the ice. So it just makes the field super, super, super slick. So you have to get really, really long spikes. And if you're not used to playing in those conditions, in those really, really long spikes, you're going to struggle. And most people struggle there whenever, you know, the snow is not constantly replacing itself and getting hard and stuff. Most people struggle there to get their footing. And you kind of saw that with the Seahawks. They slipped a little bit. Stuff looked a hair off. And credit to the Packers for having a hell of a game. I mean, they still have to play in those elements too. Like, they're a little more used to the long spikes. They're more used to the slick ground. But they have to play in those elements too. So kudos to the Packers. Really there for getting a great win. And still opening themselves up. Now they can get the division. Right, like now the division feels a little open. The Vikings did win their game, but the division feels like it's attainable now. They kind of slid through most of the stretch I thought was a little tricky, and now the division feels attainable. But week 15 was the land of the quarterback switch. So the big one. Atlanta ends the Kirk Cousins experience after 14 games. And this was not a temporary, give Kirk a week off kind of thing and bring him back. This was Michael Penix as the starter moving forward. The Michael Penix experience has begun. Big Penix energy has officially arrived in Atlanta. And the Kirk Cousins experience is over. After 14 games, 7-7, at about $90 million guaranteed. This offseason, he signed a 4-year, $180 million contract with 90 guaranteed. It was his first not fully guaranteed contract in a very long time. But he signed that deal, but now it is over. He's had three bad games in a row, and the team decided we're going to go with Penix. Now, this makes the Penix acquisition look really, really smart because you protected against near disaster in Kirk Cousins if he were to go south. And I told everybody, I'm like, the perfect plan for Atlanta is that Cousins is a starter for 2 years. Kirk plays all his guaranteed money. He's a starter. When his guaranteed money runs up, knowing him, he's going to want to renegotiate, and I tell him kick rocks. And then you bring in Penix. Penix is in about 20 games earlier than I would have wanted him to be in. However, he was, if not the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft. And so now he gets an opportunity with a Drake London, with a Bijan Robinson, with a Kyle Pitts, in order to run with that first team. And he gets the Giants as the first opponent. If you're going to land somewhere as a first opponent, against the Giants is a pretty solid landing spot. So Michael Penix era has begun. The former top 10 pick out of Washington will be the starting quarterback going forward. The Cleveland Browns have decided to end the Jameis Winston, at least for this week, and they are going to start Dorian Thompson-Robinson. While the fans love Jameis Winston, why I love seeing him play, because that's how he lets the ball go, especially out of the camera view. You don't know if it's an interception, one of the worst picks you've ever seen in your life, or one of the best throws you've ever seen in your life. It's incredibly entertaining. However, putting on my coach hat, it can be incredibly maddening. And one thing you want from backup quarterbacks, especially ones that are filling in for the entrenched starter next season, is that you don't want them to put your defense in a bad spot. Especially if you're a defensive coach, you just don't want your defense in a bad spot. Like, if you got to run the ball into the line of scrimmage three times to punt, keep the defense out of bad positions. That's an elite unit. potentially in Cleveland, led by Myles Garrett. And Jameis Winston routinely put them in bad positions or gave up points himself on pick sixes. So he heads to the bench for this week. Dorian Thompson-Robinson will draw the start. I saw Rudolph and had a brain cramp. The Tennessee Titans are benching Will Levis for Mason Rudolph. Now, Will Levis has been the meme king. He has been caught in some insanely hilarious positions on the football field. And it is absolutely insane. It is hysterical. Truly, it really is what Will Levis has been caught into. Again, as a fan, as a media member, as a coach, has to be infuriating. So infuriating, in fact, they've gone with Rudolph. Run, Rudolph. Hidden head by Myles Garrett with a helmet, Rudolph. He draws a start this week, so we'll see how Tennessee looks. If they look any better, they probably won't, because they have much bigger issues than quarterback. And our last major switch is that Tommy DeVito is being set down by the New York Giants, and they are going with Drew Lock, the embattled Drew Lock. So they're going to go with him. Probably ends the Tommy DeVito Italian love in New York, but we'll see what happens there. But our update on our big injury update, we have a lot of small stuff. Alvin Kamara's a little banged up, so on and so forth. But our big injury update, of course, is Patrick Mahomes. He's been a full participant in practice. He stated repeatedly, if he's healthy enough, he'll go. It won't be a situation where, oh, it's a little sore, I'm out. If he can do it, he's gonna go. Andy Reid echoed that sentiment. And I think that is huge for the team morale. While Carson Wentz probably could win the game, having 15 out there is huge for the morale of the team, morale of the city, hell, morale of the league itself, having Patrick Mahomes on his wizardry. Now, he's probably a lot less mobile. And Drew's a smart guy, so he probably has designed a lot more quick passes, stationary stuff. Don't want to run him as much, so that way he steps on something and, you know, hurts it even worse, because he has a mild high ankle sprain. So that's not something you want to dilly-dally with and trifle with, but we'll definitely keep an eye on that. But up next, we're going to jump into NFL Week 16. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into NFL Week 16 and discuss some big games and some big news that is going down so far this week. So we have the Denver Broncos against the Los Angeles Chargers. That game is not in Jack's Pack, so we will pick it. Now, this is a very interesting game, a game that would have not been interesting all of about 6 weeks ago. The Chargers were good, but the Broncos were a mess. People were wondering if Bo Nix was, you know, able to play football outside of against people he had a 7-year age gap on. I mean, it was a game where, okay, Denver's not going to be involved in the playoff hunt, and Chargers are going to be fighting the Chiefs for the division. Turns out, neither of those things are true. The Broncos are well in the playoff picture, and the Los Angeles Chargers are not fighting the Chiefs for playoff position, because the Chiefs have already locked up their division, because of course they have. And the Denver Broncos are in a heated battle at the middle of the AFC as far as getting into the playoff. So if the playoffs ended today, the Denver Broncos would sit with the sixth seed. Actually, the Broncos are so entrenched that according to NFL.com, their playoff probability falls to 85% if they were to lose against the Chargers. There's only 3 weeks left in the season. They have 92% chance at currently. And if they win, they are over a 99% chance to get in. The kind of game that really changes the future of the playoffs. Huge game. Because if you look at the Chargers, guess what they are? They're right below the Broncos. The Chargers are 8-6, the Broncos are 9-5. The Chargers currently have an 87% chance of making the playoffs. If they lose, it falls to a 73% chance, and they basically have no chance of catching the Broncos. Or if they win, they have a 97% chance of making the playoffs. So this is a humongous game as far as seeding and as far as even making the playoffs. If you're the Chargers, they've had a lot of bad history very recently of figuring out ways to not make the playoffs in a way that they invent ways to not make it, right? And so a lot of it was the Brandon Staley stuff. I always wonder what they would look like with a real coach. We're finding that answer out now. But this is a huge game as far as playoff seeding. I have the Chargers winning the game, which would then make a very interesting scenario in the standings as far as who ends up in that sixth seed, because that sixth seed would draw the three. Right now that three is Pittsburgh, right? That six, that seven seed goes at Buffalo. That's not a place anybody wants to go. At Buffalo in Orchard Park, that's not a place you want to go. So this game is huge to find out who even has a real shot at getting to the second round. Texans at Chiefs. Again, another game not in the Jax Pack, so we are going to pick it. This game is huge for seeding as well, but mainly for the Houston Texans. So the Texans are 9-5, first facing the AFC South. The Colts have they've all but won the division. But they are only one game behind the Steelers for the three seed. So instead of drawing potentially Baltimore in the first round, albeit at home, but still Baltimore, you are fighting, if you're the Texans, to get up to the three seed and draw either Denver or the Chargers. Either a rookie quarterback or an embattled offensive line, both of which a lot better than Baltimore. And then the Kansas City Chiefs, you're just looking to stave off the Bills. The Bills own the tiebreaker because they're in the head-to-head competition. That is the Chiefs' only loss this season. So if the Chiefs were to lose this game, Bills win, they're a game out with two left. And they finish the same record, the Bills would end up getting the one seed, and the AFC would run through Orchard Park. Huge as far as the AFC, because people have to go into Buffalo. Buffalo never has to leave New York in order to get to the Super Bowl. So humongous kind of game. I'm going to pick the Chiefs here. If it was a home game for Houston, no, actually, correction. I'm going to pick the Texans. Mahomes is going to play, but he's not 100%. And I think the Texans are going to peel back their ears and come after him and find out. Because the one thing you don't want to do on an ankle sprain is move, especially laterally. Forwards and backwards, perfectly fine. When you're having a cut and bend and turn, that's when it gets really, really painful. So I think that the Texans are going to hit him a couple times. I'm sure they're going to try to make him run. I think the Texans are going to win this game. Steelers at Ravens, a potential AFC flipping type game. Another game, not in our Jax Pack, so we are going to pick it. The Steelers versus the Ravens. What else would it be, right? And this is in the, it's the Steelers are in a mix of their all of their playoff games they had in a row. Of course, it comes down to pretty much the division. You've got 10-4 Pittsburgh, 9-5 Baltimore. You know, you have a situation where both of these teams are really, really good AFC North teams, and because of which they're going to battle. They're going to battle each other a lot. And I've got the Ravens here because of home field advantage. I think that going into M&T Bank Stadium is going to be hard for Pittsburgh. I mean, they've got Russell Wilson. They've got Mike Tomlin. I agree. But I think Baltimore is rolling right now. They had one of their best, if not their best, offensive game, especially passing the ball last week. I think they parlay that and they keep it rolling. Ravens win. Eagles at Commanders. Another game not in our Jax Pack. Wow, usually this doesn't happen. Usually we end up with some of these games in our Jax Pack. But this is a big game, again, as far as the divisional standings. Now, it means little to nothing as far as the playoff picture. I mean, the Eagles lose. Well, the Eagles lose, they almost forfeit the right of the one seed. Because there's three teams, 12-2. Lions are in, 12-2. Philly's 12-2. Minnesota's 12-2. Tampa will end up being the three seed. Los Angeles more than likely ends up. Well, no, Los Angeles and Seattle have the same exact record, 8-6. And then Arizona's at 7-7. But more than likely, either the Rams or the Seahawks get the division, which means Packers and Commanders. Packers, Commanders, and that's it. Packers and Commanders end up as your wildcard teams. So Philly's in the fight for one seed. Commanders in the fight to get in. Because if the Commanders lose, they're still supposed to get in. But it gets a lot closer. And then they share a record with the Seahawks. Because the Seahawks win their game against the Vikings. Unlikely. But if they win their game against the Vikings and they turn around the Commanders lose, that could be a huge thing as far as tiebreaker. And this playoff picture looks totally different in a few days. But I do think the Commanders get it done. Again, I'm driving that Jaden Daniels bandwagon one more time. I think the Commanders get it done and really make the NFC all topsy-turvy. Vikings at Seahawks. Oh, man, 5-5. No Jacks back-to-back games. Vikings at Seahawks. A game that we just spoke about. It's a one seed versus a make-the-playoffs type of game. Vikings have to go outside on the road to the 12th man in Seattle. Geno Smith is expected to play, but he's supposed to be a little less mobile. A little less mobile against Brian Flores. It's probably a disaster. But ultimately, the Seahawks defense has to go against Sam Darnold, who's been pretty hot. So I'm going to go with the Vikings here to all but end the Seattle Seahawks season and to continue their march to the one seed. Because the Vikings went out, they own all the tiebreakers, regardless of what happens, and they'll be the one seed. Quick hitters. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was waived by the Kansas City Chiefs and quickly signed by his hometown or home state team, the New Orleans Saints. The Catholic High and LSU alum quickly signs with his home team of the New Orleans Saints. This is coming off the heels of an injury to Alvin Kamara that may or may not affect his availability for this week. Trevor Lawrence and Evan Engram both have undergone their respective surgeries for the Jacksonville Jaguars and are expected to make full recoveries. And this NFL draft is supposed to be one of those NFL drafts that are very QB-led, sans the fact that there is two tackles that must go early, and of course, the Heisman winner, Travis Hunter. But look for a lot of Cam Ward, a lot of Jalen Milroe, a lot of Dylan Gabriels, a lot of Shador Sanders, especially in those top 10 to 15 picks. Financially, quarterbacks are right now the best bargain in sports, and so they will... they're the best bargain in sports, and so they will be continuing to pick early, especially with Vegas, especially with New York, both New Yorks potentially, especially with other teams out there that are in need of quarterbacks. Cleveland may draft, Tennessee may draft, Raiders will, Giants will. Carolina probably won't. New Orleans may draft if one falls. So you have so many different options for the position. It's going to be a lot of different guys going early. But up next, we're going to shift to our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Welcome back to the show, and now we're going to jump into our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, off a winning week, off a 3-2 week. We hadn't had a winning week in a couple of weeks, so off a winning week, 3-2, of course, you guys know my total record, 39-33-3. Those ties don't count against me, don't count for me. It's like they don't exist, because on single unit bets, as long as it's not a parlay, I just get that money back. You know, no one wins. And so it doesn't count against me. So we're still sitting at 54%. Again, the goal is to get to a 56% and above. That is our goal, but we are winning. We are positive. But let's jump right into these numbers. So Rams -3 at the Jets. Take the Rams. This is just a lot of confidence in the Rams. I get it's a cross-country trip. I get it's on the road. I get it's interconference. I understand it's Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams look like they figured it out. They just don't have enough good players for the Rams. The Rams played in an absolute monsoon of wetness against the San Francisco 49ers. To me, you have a better roster than Jets, and they still won by more than 3 points. So because of which, I'm taking the Rams -3 at the Jets. Number two, Giants plus 8.5 at the Falcons. Take the Giants. This is a complete fade of a rookie quarterback. I totally understand that Michael Penix is probably going to play well. I totally understand it is a road game for the Giants of all people. However, I think 8.5 is a large number for a rookie quarterback because I don't think he scores more than 20. So that means that the Giants just couldn't get to 12. Drew Lock lucks in for a touchdown. Couple of field goals, 13. Now you said you got to get a more than 21 for a rookie in his first start. Gets dicey. So I'm going to go with the Giants here, plus 8.5 over the Falcons. Bengals, minus 7.5 over the Browns. Take the Bengals. Complete and total fade of Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I mean, without a shadow of a doubt. Love Jameis Winston. He's my guy. Probably if Jameis was in, I'd probably still take the minus 7.5. But this is a complete and total fade of Dorian Thompson-Robinson as a NFL quarterback at all, let alone a starter in this league. Take the Bengals, minus 7.5. Lions, minus 6.5 at the Bears. Take the Lions. This being a complete and total fade of the city of Chicago in football. Not necessarily one specific person, a fade of the entire city when it comes to football. Honestly, the entire city when it comes to sports stands about 7 years of Michael Jordan's career. It is preposterous that the Lions won't beat the Bears by more than a touchdown. By a touchdown or more. Not even more than a touchdown. It's not 7.5. It's just a touchdown that they have to win by. It is preposterous the Lions won't get that done. And then lastly, Raiders, minus 1.5 over the Jags. Take the Raiders. Complete and total fade of Mac Jones. He's awful. And I think there's going to be a game where Brock Bowers gets to eat. The Raiders put up, 21, 22 points. Jaguars never crossed 13. And the Raiders win the game. Again, complete and total fade of Mac Jones. I have no faith in that guy whatsoever. I'm a Patriots fan. Maybe I'm a little scorned. No faith in that guy whatsoever. Not even a little bit. Complete and total fade of Mac Jones. So again, let's run through these numbers really quickly. Rams minus 3 over the Jets. Giants plus 8.5 over the Falcons. Bengals minus 7.5 over the Browns. Lions minus 6.5 over the Bears. And Raiders minus 1.5 over the Jaguars. But up next, we're going to talk about college football. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about the college football playoff. Now, we touched on it last episode. I gave some quick insights, but now I want to really get into each individual game. And I really am excited for this. This is like the playoff has an opportunity. And I think they kind of need to redo how it's done because of how it played out. So on the game, you didn't get like Boise State because they happened to be highly ranked because someone stole it. That didn't happen too often, right? Like the seeds kind of made sense. I think because of that, conference champion, I think it should be the Power Four champions plus the highest ranked non-Power Four gets the bid. Doesn't guarantee you the home game or the bye. I think it just gets you in. And then the seven at-larges. And then once you get the 12, you reseed from there, 1 through 12. I think that's a lot better than bye weeks and this out of third. Because Boise State's on a bye. Arizona State's on a bye. Because Clemson won instead of SMU. And it's like, nah. But like, you're looking at you like, yeah, but wouldn't, like, logically Notre Dame and Texas should have that bye. Just look at that, like, you know what I'm saying? Notre Dame and Penn State, not either one of you two. But it is what it is, right? Indiana goes on the road at Notre Dame. Notre Dame was a touchdown favorite. That feels about right. Maybe it feels a little low. I think Notre Dame wins this game. I think Notre Dame wins it comfortably. I just don't think that. I don't think Indiana has the athletes. And it's not necessarily saying Notre Dame is the world's most athletic place, but Indiana was a crap show for years for a reason. It's a hard place to recruit. You're in the middle of Big Ten country. You're staring at Ohio State. You're staring at Michigan. Like, it's hard. You stand at Minnesota, it's hard to recruit there at times at a high level. And they just really started doing it last recruiting cycle. So it's going to be hard for them to keep with Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman's been recruiting his tail off since he got there as a defensive coordinator. And I think that trend will continue. Not only in the recruiting trail, but in this game, I think Notre Dame wins by more than a touchdown. Clemson at Texas. Texas minus 12. Another number that feels low. The only reason why this number isn't 15 to 18, in my opinion, is Quinn Ewers' health. If Quinn Ewers was healthy, they're just bigger, faster, and stronger than Clemson. And coaches always talk about X and O's. They can scheme. When you go to that field, and both sides basically have thrown their best shot, it gets to be Jimmy's and Joe's over X and O's. X and O's on the board hasn't won a football game yet. Jimmy's and Joe's on the field did. There's a lot better Jimmy's and Joe's that play for Texas than play for Notre Dame, than play for Clemson. Plain and simple. It's not even a question athletically. Texas is considerably better than Clemson to a man. And because of which, I think they handle Clemson. 12 points is a lot. That 12 points to me depends on the health of Quinn Ewers. So I think Arch Manning could put up some points. Yes. But I do think it is very dependent on Quinn Ewers to cover that 12. Tennessee at Ohio State. Ohio State minus 7.5. Now, this one feels big, especially because there's a rumor that 40% of that crowd is going to be Tennessee people. Which, if it is, shame on Ohio State for allowing your stadium, especially in the first ever college football playoff, in order to not secure 90% of the tickets. I'm sure it was not a mandate that you had to give up so many of your tickets to the other school. I know bowl games, they give so many tickets to each side and so on and so forth. It's not a bowl game. I'm almost positive that there was no mandate to give up 40% of your tickets to Tennessee. So in the middle of the horseshoe, trying to, intimidate opponents, there's only a mass line of orange that's going to disrupt what Ohio State wants to do. That could be a little legitimate volume when Ohio State's snapping the ball. It could be a lot quieter than it's supposed to be when Tennessee's hiking the ball. I mean, that's huge. If that number is true and it's 40,000 people coming from Tennessee, that's going to be huge for the Volunteers. And then the last thing in the first round, SMU at Penn State. Penn State minus 8.5. I think the spread's a little low. I think it's going to be 10.5, 11.5. And that's because SMU, similar to Indiana, you ain't got the horses yet. And so when you get down to a dogfight with Penn State, and they're leaning on you, and they're beating on you, and they sweep around you, and they're leaning on you, and they're beating on you, you just don't have the horses yet. Good team, they don't have the horses yet. And so I think that's going to be a difference maker between SMU and Penn State. I think Penn State covers the 8.5. So if I'm on a betting pool, I go take the points on Notre Dame, take the points on Texas. Well, hold on Texas right now. Wait on Ewers. If Ewers is up, take the points. If Ewers is down, don't take the points. Ohio State, don't take the points. Penn State, take the points. The transfer portal is alive and well. You see guys like a TJ Finley, who's on his fifth team. You see some guys on their third. Slaughter. He's the quarterback from Liberty. He committed to Colorado. LSU's got like 7 or 8 guys already committed out the portal. So it's a fun time. And you've got some older coaches complaining about guardrails. And I'm like, there was no guardrails to begin with. Those guardrails didn't exist for those who didn't care. Black bags on driveways and job offers and magically this car. Like, it's been the case for those who don't care. But now that everyone can do it, the shady guys have lost employment because they no longer need to be shady because they can just give the money to the kid. So that's interesting. But the portal, I think, has opened up a lot of possibilities because now someone who was under-recruited in high school can go to a school, put up numbers, put it on tape, and then come up to the school level that they actually belong in. But up next, we're going to shift to the NBA and talk about what's going down there in our best for last. Welcome to the show. And now we're going to jump right into the NBA. We're going to start off with a congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks on winning the in-season tournament, or the Emirates NBA Cup. Darvin Ham maintains his perfect record in the NBA Cup as he won it as the head coach of the Lakers. Now he won it as the lead assistant for the Milwaukee Bucks. And he has heavily influenced how the Bucks will celebrate. Doc Rivers said that he leaned on Darvin Ham, and Ham was like, hey, the whole big giant celebration probably negatively affected us the rest of the season. And so Doc Rivers decided that, hey, we're going to celebrate it, but we're not going to do the whole big giant thing the Lakers did because we have a bigger goal in mind. And Giannis continues his one-man band of carrying the Milwaukee Bucks to greatness. He has flown, in my opinion, to the top of the MVP race. And he is going to continue to do so as long as he keeps putting up these numbers. And then some quick hitters as far as trade news. The NBA trade deadline is a couple months away, but the smoke has already started. The New Orleans Pelicans, unless your name is Eve Misi, Herb Jones, or Trey Murphy, have made you available, reportedly. Now, CJ McCollum had to answer some questions about this, which is not great, but when you're 5-22 and you're a team that's above that first apron, it could cost them a fairly cheap ownership group, going to be honest, as a fan. A fairly cheap ownership group, $18 million in revenue share, they're going to start cutting salaries at some point. I think Jose Alvarado is probably the person that gets moved in a salary purpose. And they hold everyone else because injuries kind of rock this team. Zach LaVine, of course, is always in trade discussions, but now Lonzo Ball has been added for the Chicago Bulls. So both starting backcourt members, when healthy, have been added to the trade smoke. Jonas Valanciunas, his contract is probably going to be traded from the Wizards before the trade deadline. He is probably going to land on a contender, which is huge for Valanciunas because he really hasn't played a lot of meaningful basketball in his career. And then D'Angelo Russell will be the Lakers' ultimate trade piece. He will be moved at some point for someone of value, probably a wing if they can get their hands on a LaVine, or maybe he's involved in the Valanciunas deal. But that is all I have for the day. Thank you guys for rocking out with me on this Thursday by the time you guys hear this. So I appreciate you guys listening in, making Just In Time Sports a part of your week. As always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, don't forget to follow and turn on any post notifications for the social media handle at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias. Now, this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.